Today on Uncommon Stories, we will take a look at one of the most beloved and popular sitcoms ever produced, The Andy Griffith Show. And then look at the evolution of television, where The Andy Griffith Show and every other show and TV event has been showcased. So get your fishing pole out, say hey to your neighbors as you walk downtown, and sit on the porch and sing an old song in the evening as we remember the good old days, as portrayed in the small town of Mayberry, North Carolina, on The Andy Griffith Show. The show originated as an episode, and the show's pilot to be used to sell to sponsors, on the ever-popular and famous The Danny Thomas Show. Sheldon Leonard, producer of The Danny Thomas Show, and Thomas were major players in the television world, and felt they needed another show to call their own. So they asked veteran comedy writer Arthur Stander to write a pilot script for a show that revolves around a justice of the peace and newspaper editor in a small rural town. Thomas was looking for an actor who could play the quintessential small-town country boy to play the lead role, and found his choice in the up-and-coming Broadway, film, and radio star Andy Griffith. Having completed a successful comedic act and television and Broadway productions of No Time for Sergeants, where Griffith played a small-town country boy, and wanting to make the jump to a television series, Griffith was the perfect choice. After Leonard spoke with Griffith, the two could see a good match in creating the pilot to be aired on The Danny Thomas Show. Jumping on a plane, Griffith flew to L.A. and filmed the pilot for his potential show, Danny Meets Andy Griffith. Even though the title has Andy Griffith, Andy's character on his show is Andy Taylor. Future stars of The Andy Griffith Show, Francis Bevier and Ron Howard, appeared in the episode. Ron is Andy's son Opie Taylor, and Francis as Henrietta Perkins, the nosy neighbor of the small town. Francis would go on to make famous Aunt B. Taylor once the show was picked up. And picked up it was. General Foods, sponsor of The Danny Thomas Show, had first access and committed to it immediately. With Leonard and Thomas heading up the show, and an up-and-coming comedic actor in Andy Griffith, the show had all the makings of a success, and General Foods went on to become the only sponsor of the show. The Ford Motor Company had promotional considerations for providing all of the cars, including the famous squad car, which virtually became a character of the show in and of itself. With a large corporation as its sponsor, successful producer in Sheldon Leonard and production company Danny Thomas Productions, and the star of the show in place, it was time to create The Andy Griffith Show. A few modifications were made from the pilot. First, Andy became the sheriff and justice of the peace. They felt a sheriff would lend itself to more antics than a newspaper editor. And I think they were right. And as mentioned, Francis Bevier was cast as Aunt B, but Ron Howard kept his role as Opie Taylor, rounding out the Taylor household. Second, a few more regular townspeople were added to give Andy more opportunities for mishaps. Floyd Lawson, played by Howard McNear, was the town barber, and Gomer Pyle, played by Jim Nabors, was the gas station attendant. Clara Edwards, played by Hope Summers, became the nosy neighbor, taking Francis Bevier's place from the pilot. And in the first season, they added the lady druggist, Ellie Walker, played by Eleanor Donahue, from Father Knows Best fame. But they needed something else, and they weren't sure exactly what. Enter one of the most famous actors to ever play the comedic sidekick in TV and even film history, Don Knotts. Knotts had worked with Griffith and had seen the pilot, and he knew exactly what they needed. He called Griffith during the development stage and said Andy needs a deputy. Griffith agreed and pitched the idea to the creative team. After Knotts auditioned for now executive producer Sheldon Leonard, he was offered a 5-year contract to play the ever-popular Barney Fife. And thus the nucleus of The Andy Griffith Show was established, and they were ready to shoot the first episode. It turned out to be a work in progress. Griffith played his Andy Taylor character much like his No Time for Sergeants character, backwoods, southern small-town bumpkin, making mistakes and causing problems. But it wasn't working. After just 2 episodes, Griffith realized Knotts had the better handle on the comedic nature of the show. and turned to his character to cause the problems that needed to be solved in the episode. The comedy of the show began to reveal itself. But it wasn't until the break between the first and second seasons that Griffith realized the flaw in his character. One day, after meeting about the upcoming season, he said, "My God, I just realized that I'm the straight man. I'm playing straight to all these kooks around me." So Griffith changed Taylor to be a wise problem solver, frustrated by the antics of the townspeople, but thoughtfully helping them at every turn. And that is when all the pieces fell into place. Andy is now, for all essential purposes, the leader of the sleepy town of Mayberry, North Carolina. He upholds the law and is justice of the peace. He is the one everyone comes to for just about every problem in town, and ends up in the middle of every dispute and mishap, which are usually started by his loyal, well-meaning, but bumbling deputy, Barney Fife. Add in a few more colorful characters like town drunk Otis Campbell, played by Hal Smith, Ernest T. Bass, played by Howard Morris, Helen Crump, played by Annetta Corsett, who became Andy's sweetheart after Eleanor Donahue left the show after the first season, and Thelma Lou, played by Betty Lynn, and you have the makings for a top-rated sitcom. And top-rated it was. The series never placed lower than 7th in the Nielsen ratings, and ended its final season number 1. Only two other sitcoms have ever done that: I Love Lucy and Seinfeld. And on two separate occasions, it was ranked by TV Guide as the 9th and 13th best show in American television history. Surprisingly, though, Griffith nor the show ever won an award during its 8 seasons. The show was nominated 3 times for an Outstanding Comedy Series Emmy, but lost to the Jack Benny program in its debut season, the Bob Newhart Show in its 2nd season, and finally, The Monkees in its 5th season. But cast members had better fortune, especially Don Knotts. He won an Emmy for Outstanding Performance in a Supporting Role by an Actor 5 times, and Frances Bevier took home an Emmy for Outstanding Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role in a Comedy once. I guess it pays to play the kooks in a comedy series. And there we have what started one of the most loved and most watched shows, as well as in reruns, in the history of television. But there are some behind-the-scenes escapades and little-known facts that make the Andy Griffith Show even more interesting. Griffith enjoyed creating comedy shows and comedy routines. He also enjoyed practical jokes, especially playing them on his fellow cast members and the crew. Most everyone associated with the show went along with Griffith's jokes, and even joined in playing some back on him. But one person didn't care for joking around on set, and didn't like practical jokes at all: Frances Bevier. And this caused a lot of friction between her and Griffith. They played their scenes as professionals, but off-screen, they didn't have much to do with each other. And Bevier didn't hide her displeasure of Griffith and the cast playing around on set. One time, when the show had spun off to Mayberry RFD, Bevier smacked George Lindsay, who played Goober Pyle, Gomer Pyle's cousin, on the head with her umbrella for cursing. You see, Bevier came from the theater and played big roles with theater stars on Broadway. Acting was serious business to her, and not to be taken lightly. Working with comedians and comedic actors was a bit rough for the New York actress, but she managed to play her role with the utmost professionalism all the way to the end. An interesting note about the set where the Andy Griffith Show was shot. Turns out it is the same set where Gone with the Wind was shot. There were just so many sets back in the early days of Hollywood, so many shows were shot on one set. But for a comedy TV series and a dramatic movie to share a set, that was a little unique. Back to actors from the series. One actor was completely different from the character he played. He played one of the most endearing characters, and one of the funniest, Hal Smith, who played town drunk Otis Campbell. Unlike his character, Smith was not a drinker. Not socially, not even a little. He didn't drink. And surprisingly, many of the roles he was cast in after the Andy Griffith Show, he played a drunk. guess he did too good a job and got a little typecast. Another interesting note to the character, Otis Campbell. The show was well received as a wholesome, uplifting comedy. So later in the series, audiences became weary of a town drunk. Thus, Otis became more scarce. And Hal Smith was finally dropped from the cast. However, he did come back for a couple episodes in the last 2 years. Topping Otis on the lovable scale was Barney Fife, the iconic sidekick to Andy Taylor. But Barney only made it through season 5. But as one of the main and most influential characters to the plot, how can this be? And how could the show last 3 more seasons without him? When the show was first created, Andy Griffith signed on for 5 years, as did Don Knotts. They thought for sure the show would run its course in that time, but audiences craved for more. So Griffith decided to keep the show going. Thinking the show would end, Don Knotts looked for future work after season 5, and not knowing the show would return for a 6th season, he signed a 3-year film deal with Universal. His shooting schedule for his film work conflicted with the shooting for the Andy Griffith Show, so Barney had to leave Mayberry. Knotts came back to play in a few episodes in the last years, and even won an award for one of those performances, but the Sheriff's Department would never be the same. Knowing Don was going to leave, the creators first tried to fill his shoes with Jerry Van Dyke. That's right, legendary funny man Dick Van Dyke's younger brother. Van Dyke played in one episode where Andy tries to help out his character and lets him work in the Sheriff's Department, but he decides to be the deputy on his own, and the troubles begin. The producers decided Van Dyke wasn't what they were looking for in Barney's replacement, and Van Dyke wasn't asked back. Then the creators tried to fill Knotts' shoes with comedian Jack Burns, playing Deputy Warren Ferguson. His character was not well received, and was written out of the show in the middle of season 6. Barney's antics and troublemaking then went to 3 characters that helped the series last through the 8th season. Goober Pyle, new county clerk Howard Sprague, played by Jack Dodson, and new handyman Emmett Clark, played by Paul Hartman. The characters were funny, clever, and caused Andy a lot of trouble, but it is obvious the show was not the same once Don Knotts left and Barney wasn't the deputy anymore. From the creative minds of Danny Thomas and Sheldon Leonard, who by the way was honored by the creators of The Big Bang Theory, Chuck Lorre and Bill Pratty, when they named the lead characters of that show Sheldon and Leonard. To the comedic talents of Andy Griffith and Don Knotts, The Andy Griffith Show staked its claim as one of the most favorite and loved shows in television history. And speaking of television history, what is the history of television? Let's take a quick look. There's a lot of scientists, inventors, and companies involved in the evolution of television. And we could go on for hours talking about the technical and scientific facts behind the making of television. But that isn't very interesting. So let's go over just a few facts. The basis from which television started is interesting, and it began with experiments to transmit still photos over telegraph and telephone lines, which dates back to the mid-1800s. Inventor Alex Bain introduced a prototype version of a fax machine using the telegraph in 1843, but it only worked in theory. It took 8 more years for the first working fax machine to be demonstrated by inventor Frederick Bakewell in 1851. And these fax experiments became the technology on which television became possible. After further experiments in transmitting images over radio system and creating electronic methods of scanning and displaying images over radio waves, and eventually satellites and cable, and now the even more popular web streaming, television, which was first called TV in 1948, has become the most widely used form of communicating information and entertainment. Creators of television first envisioned it to be used as an educational tool, and even though it still is, that usually isn't the first reason someone clicks the power button to turn on the TV. Although there are many people to credit for the invention of television, Philo Taylor Farnsworth is considered the inventor of TV, as he was the first to successfully demonstrate a television signal transmission on September 7, 1927, with his own scanning tube. Later in life, though, after seeing what television had become, Farnsworth regretted making his invention. Once he said to his family, "There's nothing on it worthwhile, and we're not going to watch it in this household, and I don't want it in your intellectual diet." Almost sounds like my parents when I was growing up. But on to more fun facts. The first television show was The Queen's Messenger, which aired on September 11, 1928. It was a 40-minute long drama on WGY Television, General Electric's experimental station based in Schenectady, New York. To go along with that, the first TV commercial to air was for Bulova Watches, which aired on July 1, 1941. The company paid $9 for the ad, a far cry from the millions spent on commercials and airing the commercials in the Super Bowl today. And somewhat surprising, the first national TV broadcast in color was the 1954 Tournament of Roses Parade. But since most of the nation had black and white TV sets, programming was still mostly black and white until 1965. And sales of color TVs didn't surpass black and white sales until 1972. Now let's try our hand at some fun TV trivia. Who is the longest running TV star? Give up? Betty White. She first appeared on TV in 1949, and her first TV series was Life with Elizabeth in 1953. And at the ripe old age of 98, she can still be seen on new TV shows today. What was the first situation comedy? Hint, it aired before 1950. It was the Mary Kay and Johnny show, about a wife and husband and stressing the comedy side of being married. It aired in 1947. And to go along with that, what was the first American soap opera? It was Search for Tomorrow, which debuted in 1951. And now for an easy one. What was the first televised U.S. presidential debate? You might remember it was John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon. It was that debate that many feel put Nixon in a bad light, as he did not come across on television nearly as well as John F. Kennedy. And our last one, which TV show had the largest viewership for one episode? The answer, the ever-popular MASH. Its final episode had an amazing 105.97 million total viewers. Well, the television and all its shows have had an incredible history, and it certainly has had a huge impact on our society. Although we probably spend too much time in front of it, as well as using all of our other electronic devices, and some would say it has cost us our social skills and outside time greatly, it is fun to watch our favorite shows, a sports game or two, and who could argue with family time curling up in front of the TV watching a good movie together? My mother may have called it the boob tube during my younger days, but even she had her favorite shows. So, here is to TV and one of its most loved shows, The Andy Griffith Show. I hope future generations will continue to use TV wisely and create more entertaining shows like the one we showcased today. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories. And come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for listening.